coming to Made in the 80s, the scary October version. This is your host, Shalia, and today we have
Tim
and Kendon.
Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully you're having a good first beginning of October. We survived another scary movie today, or this week, that we're talking about, An American Werewolf in London. Tim, was this your suggestion?
Yes, it's one of my favorite movies. I watched it as a kid, probably a little too early.
Oh.
But I remember just loving it and enjoying it. I think distinctly it was the transformation scene.
It's amazing.
Looks painful.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we will get to that. But first, you guys, what's the news?
The news. News item I have is a bit of sad news.
Oh.
Hope you're ready for it. Chris Evans sent out a tweet because he is saying farewell to his beloved character, Captain America.
Yeah.
His tweet reads, oh.
But we knew this was happening already.
I don't know if we had the confirmation.
We assumed.
Yeah. I mean, we knew his contract was up.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought so. But this was very interesting that he's like, we wrapped and...
He says...
It's done.
And I quote, officially wrapped on Avengers 4... It was an emotional day, to say the least. Playing this role over the last 8 years has been an honor to everyone in front of the camera, behind the camera, and in the audience. Thank you for the memories. Eternally grateful. Cap is dead.
Well, I was about to ask, do you think that means that Cap is dead or that he retires?
He never stopped being Captain America, so I think he's dead.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. If he could come back, then he wouldn't be done.
Yeah, I think he's done. I think he was...
saying goodbye. I didn't cry, but I got teary-eyed when it...
Oh, wait till he dies on screen. You're going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has it really been 8 years, though? It seems longer than that. I mean, no. Chris Evans has been Captain America for a while. Years isn't that long.
It's been 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, Avengers was 2011, right? So yeah. The first Avenger was the name of the first Captain America movie.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
Yeah, so that would have been, what, 2009 or 10, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, the Iron Mans were out first, so we've got that. But I just feel like I saw a pin I posted years back of Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth with holding their shield and their hammer or something. Mm-hmm. And it was probably around the first Avengers time. And they're really young.
They definitely have
changed a lot in that time.
They're definitely babies, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my news.
Man. Kendon, do you have news?
I do have news. So I don't know if we've told the audience yet, but we just spent a week in Copenhagen.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
Last week.
So it was a really great trip. One of the reasons we went was to go to the Lego house.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great documentary about it on Netflix where you can really see kind of the design and the conception behind what they did, which is, you know, kind of a showcase of all the different aspects of Lego. Anyways, my actual news item, though, is that I come back, and after a couple of days, turns out that my current favorite video game is Overwatch. It's basically an objective-based team shooter with a bunch of weird cartoon characters, right? Sort of. Anyways, so they just announced that Lego is partnering with Blizzard Entertainment, who makes Overwatch and World of Warcraft, which people may have heard of, and StarCraft, and they're going to be making Overwatch Lego sets. So
nice.
Yeah. And then I looked at my wallet longingly, like, damn it.
Now you gotta spend more money.
Yeah.
So that is exciting news. Too bad your birthday's almost, I mean, it's in July, so you've got a long way. But Christmas is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, speaking of my birthday, we're currently working on that Voltron. So there will be a picture up for listeners to see after we finish putting together Lego Voltron.
Yep. Well, so I do have a little bit of news as well. Did you guys hear that Disney has announced they're going to do a live action Lilo and Stitch?
Yes. You trying to audition for it?
No. No, I'm not.
Ohana means family.
Does mean family. Family means nobody gets left behind or forgotten.
Aww.
Yeah, I'm not feeling this.
Why?
Why? Who's going to play Stitch? What? A live action Stitch?
It's a CGI Stitch.
I want to see practical effects.
It's a CGI Stitch.
So,
but to be fair, it's the same company that did, that's going to do The Lion King, that looks this live action, and they just did a live action Jungle Book. I trust them to do a live action Lilo and Stitch.
Man. So the
there's only one character.
Lilo and Stitch is such a great, great, great film. Mm-hmm. And the music in that movie was really exciting when they made it. Mm-hmm. And are they going to keep it? Is it going to be the same music, or are they changing that too?
No, they own the music. Why would they change it?
Okay. I still don't know. I don't know.
Have faith.
Tendon's shaking your head.
I think this is all kind of lazy. Like, why are you remaking all of your movies live action instead of making something else interesting and different? A lot of the actual charm of something like Lilo and Stitch is the fact that it's not live action. Like, you get those different expressions and you kind of get a different flavor from animation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like movies like what a live action Lilo and Stitch would be have already been made, right? A cute alien lands and gets into mischief and they have to hide it. And I mean, I think that's been done. I don't see what the point of making, I mean, except for that they'll make money. Like, I know.
Yeah. That's kind of the point.
It's not for me, no, but still.
That's the point.
Yeah. So we'll watch it, but I don't know. So any other news for this week? All right, you guys, what have you been up to? What have you been watching, listening to, thinking about doing?
I watched Venom.
You did.
I did.
And?
I survived.
You survived.
It's a mess. It's a Venom story without Spider-Man. It's kind of all over the place. It's totally different. It's got some weird beats to it. Like, so they spin up, and you'll love this, the science in it. They do all this fake movie science about how this organism, the symbiotes, need a host, and like everyone's not a compatible host. And so we go through this montage of people getting the symbiote attached to them and it sort of rejecting them.
They are extraterrestrial.
They're from space. So that's the whole setup. Like, the first act is like, that's part of the science that Carlton Drake, played by Riz Ahmed, his character says, right? He runs this place called the Life Foundation. But later on in the movie, people are just wearing the symbiote like it's nothing. People are just attaching it and running around the city in it. And I don't know how. And then people react like they don't see Venom. Like it's not their first time seeing him when he like becomes this big Venom. When Eddie Brock turns into Venom, they're like, Eddie, oh, what's going on? Instead of like, hey man, that's a demonic looking alien thing.
So I've heard I think a good idea that this is kind of comparable to Upgrade.
No. Upgrade as far as the inner dialogue? Yeah. That's the best part of the movie. It is Tom Hardy having this inner monologue conversations with Venom.
No, I was thinking about basically an Upgrade, some sort of sci-fi technology that takes over your body and then gives you enhanced abilities. Also, that guy looked like a knockoff Tom Hardy.
Upgrade's a much better version of that story.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like basically they're telling a similar story.
Yeah, but then like Venom, the reason Venom's there and what he's trying to do and what he's trying to stop Carlton Drake from doing is just, it's so stupid. I'm not going to spoil it, but it's dumb. It'll make you mad.
Are there any gems? Anything to look forward to?
The post-credit scene. Second one.
Okay.
Second one's great. It leads into Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
That's nice. All right.
Yes.
What Spider-Verse? Like Homecoming?
No, like all of the Spider-Verses. Like the animated movie Sony's doing is coming out in December.
So this live action movie is connected to that.
In a way.
And that's the one with Miles Morales?
Yes. Cool. So we get to see a young Miles flying around New York City in his Jordan 1s.
Yes.
He goes to Peter Parker's grave. It's great. It's great. I can't wait to see that. And I was just reading tweets before we recorded that people have seen it at 35 minutes of it in New York City Comic Con. And they said it's fantastic.
They showed 35 minutes of it.
And I don't know if I said this on this podcast or not, or on About to Review. Shout out to John. But I think that might be Sony's lane. It it's not this Spider-Man-less Spider-Man universe. It's going to be an animated universe with Spider-Man and sort of this large selection of characters from Spider-Gwen to Silk to Venom to whoever, all the villains. It's access to that. I think in the animated world is probably where they want to go with their, instead of like trying to do this live action stuff, because they can't do it. What was the last good live action Spider-Man? Spider-Man 2? And I liked the Amazing Spider-Mans, but like the last good one.
Yeah, I liked aspects of the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
But the last like solid Spider-Man 2. That was years ago.
Spider-Man Homecoming was excellent.
That's not Sony.
Oh, you're saying last Sony one.
Yeah.
Okay, got you.
They don't have an idea about what they're doing.
Sounds like you're proposing, though, is Sony is basically needs to do what DC should be doing, which is stick to the animated.
I think DC has something because they've done Wonder Woman well. I think Wonder Woman 2 will be good. Aquaman looks promising. And Shazam looks fun and silly. I think they have something. I think they have to get away from Batman and the Joker.
And Superman.
And Superman. I like Superman.
Have we talked about the new Joker on mic yet?
No, I don't think so.
I don't. He looks fine.
He looks fine.
If the Heath Ledger and even Jared Leto hadn't existed, now he just looks super, or more from the point of view of Heath Ledger, he looks super derivative.
Yeah, it's just fine. Listen, I was telling John, like, I need to see way more of this to be excited or have an opinion on it. It looks fine. It doesn't look terrible to me, but I need to see way more.
Do you remember when we did a collaboration with John on the About to Review podcast? And I think it was John who mentioned that, you know, Christopher Reeves was Clark Kent and Superman, and everyone who's played that character afterwards is imitating Christopher Reeve.
Right.
I feel like what you're explaining for this Joker is a similar type of thing of now coming later, basically, you're not Joker in yourself. You're imitating Heath Ledger.
Yeah, because Heath Ledger was the first super dark Joker.
I'm kind of saying that, except for that I don't think Jared Leto was doing... I think he was more of a response. And his Joker was more of a, like, a douchebag Florida gangster sort of Joker.
Exactly. I'm excluding Jared Leto as derivative of Heath Ledger's version. But when you're talking about this new Joker, it sounds to me like he's acting Heath Ledger, but I don't know. We'll see.
So when it comes to the Joker, one thing I think that I'd like to see, because we've seen the Heath Ledger thing, and it seems like, what is the actor who's doing this again?
Joaquin Phoenix.
I think we've seen kind of the gangster Joker. We've seen now Heath Ledger's, I don't even know what to call his. His is like street Joker or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we should go back or at least have a version of kind of a put together dapper Joker. Like, I feel like I saw a lot of, what is it, Cesar Romero?
Yeah.
Who played him in the 1960s Batman. I saw a lot of that in Jack Nicholson's.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the idea that he has like a well put together suit. His makeup is stylish. He's stylish. He's not necessarily, his makeup is put together like,
that's not, another. It's not smeared or not, run down, yeah. And he looks and like a crazy person. Yeah, he's dressed to the nines, but he's crazy.
And exactly. And then you have the other side of that, the other side of his personality, which is he's a chaos agent.
Yeah.
He's a complete chaos agent who is totally put together in his appearance.
Right. I think that's part of why he seems so crazy, because his appearance would not suggest that he is that way.
Can Jindena, how do you say his name?
Jindena?
Yeah, can he play
No.
it? Yes, he can. No. He's all dapper.
We don't know if he can act like that.
I actually kind of see what you're talking about, Shalia. I don't know if he can act. He had a couple scenes in Insecure.
Yeah, I don't know if he can do that. You got to be an actor to pull that off.
A couple scenes in Insecure that made me mad at him or not mad at him, but I was cool off him for a while.
That's fine.
Until I forgot.
We're talking about holding a whole movie now.
I think he could do it. I'd love to see his hair green.
Oh, yeah. And it would look good, too. He will make it look good. He would be a good-looking Joker.
No.
I make this look good.
No.
All right, Kendon, do you want to go next, or do you want me to go in terms of what I've been watching, thinking about doing? All right, so first let's start with what I have not been watching, thinking about doing, or attending. We were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, and the whole fear of missing out. This is the legit missing out. We had some exciting stuff happen in Seattle this week. First of all, Beyonce was here, and I didn't get to go to that concert.
You just dismissed Jay-Z that he wasn't with her.
So here's the thing, and I think it was... Beyonce was here. She was here. I mean, it was Beyonce, and Jay-Z was here too. And somebody, I think, posted that... Jay-Z was amazing, right? He's up there doing all of his best songs, and he's still the second best performer at this concert, which says something. And I am so sad. I've never gotten to see her. I want to see her, but I don't want to spend a whole bunch of money. And then one of my friends got to go for $20. I'm like, well, I should have tried a little harder. Anyway, so missed that. Did not see that or hear that this week. And then... on Friday night, the Key Arena had its last event before it's getting remodeled so that they can have hopefully a hockey team come, an NHL team come to Seattle. And so it was an exhibition game for the NBA with the Golden State Warriors and Sacramento Kings. And it was a packed house. And I've seen posts of those two and pictures. And it sounds like it was very emotional. And I didn't get to see that either. Neither of you guys were there for either of those things, right?
No, but I went to a preseason game. Thanks to my friend Chris, a couple years ago, we went to see the Raptors and the Warriors.
Aww.
In Canada. They do like Canada Cares.
Yeah.
So Vancouver has a game.
But not a Key Arena. Not like a Key NBA Key Arena.
And it made me miss the NBA.
Yeah.
The lights went out, they did the intro, and I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah. So for listeners who aren't from Seattle, we used to have an NBA team here.
10 years ago.
The Sonics. And we missed them. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. I mean, I enjoyed Sonics games. I would go.
I feel bad for young people, man. They missed out on like the clubs. There's an NBA team in town and these dudes go out and party.
That's true.
And it makes the nightlife exponentially better.
You're right. I forgot about that.
The type of people that come out, the celebrities to show up and show out.
That was, I mean, so we That's were in college thing. And they were still here. That That's would a happen.
Very real
You'd
thing.
You'd see them at
these parties. I ran into Vince Carter at a party. So it's not just your team. I saw LeBron at the club. Like, these are things that happen in a city that has an NBA team.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you don't have it,
or
you just
even,
don't have it.
Gosh, what movie was it? It might have been like Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
Where my uncle saw them, like I think it was the Sonics. It was like the whole team came to the movie theater to watch it. And my uncle was you will see them around town too.
So I used to work in a movie theater and we would get NBA teams that came in all the time.
Yeah,
it was my first introduction to groupies. There was a girl, I distinctly remember this girl came in. She was so attractive. And then, you know, this is like midweek on like a Tuesday. There's never any attractive women coming into a movie theater. If you worked at a theater, you know what I'm talking about. Midweek, there are not a lot of attractive people who show up. It's not a lot of single women, very attractive, coming by themselves.
Got it.
That's a Friday, Saturday. That's a weekend thing. It rarely happens midweek. So I see this girl who's just stunning. I'm like, what is she doing here? Then she's with some of the Portland Trailblazers. And I was like, oh, okay, she's with these dudes. Pay no mind, right? The next night, I see the same girl. Oh, she's doing here again. She's with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And she looked at me and she just smiled and was like, yeah.
Interesting.
I was like, oh, this is the thing. This is young 19-year-old me being like, oh, this is the thing that happens. but I feel so bad. You know, the last 10 years, these young people who've grown up in this city, especially people in our culture who listen to the kind of music we listen to, who enjoy some of the same things, who travel and go to Vegas and go to All-Star Weekends and do those things. They're missing out on like having it in your city.
Yeah, they
like,
are.
There's something fun about, hey, we're going to hit the club and it's going to be popping because there was a game Saturday night and the team's here till Wednesday. So everybody's going out to kick it after the game. And you might see Kevin Durant at the club. Think of all these stars. You might see these young dudes. They're young. These dudes are young, 19, 20, 21. They're trying to kick it.
Man.
Yeah.
I think Tim Uver, you're the one who mentioned it, that Kevin Durant was also, he was drafted.
He was drafted by
us.
The Sonics.
So he started in Seattle as a Sonic.
They left after his rookie season. Mm-hmm. Played in the Key.
And he was here, he was also here as with the Warriors last night.
Yeah. It's funny, he with the Warriors, and then also the Kings were a possible team to come here before rapey Kevin Johnson decided to save this team and bring them back. Kevin Johnson has a very bad track record. I don't know if you guys have looked that up.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, look it up. It's not good. Hmm. It's very bad. No, it's going to make you hate him.
Yeah, probably will.
Yeah, it will.
But okay, anyway, but I don't hate Kevin Durant. You don't hate Kevin Durant. He came out in his Sonics jersey.
Yeah, he had a Kim jersey on.
Yay! So, yeah. Oh, man. Anyway, I missed out.
Oh, I forgot to say, I went to wrestling. Went to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
That was
how
fun.
How was it?
It was great.
How did John, as a first-timer, enjoy it?
We were close.
Yeah.
Thank you, Damien, for the tickets, because we were close. We were five rows back.
And any thrown chairs or something?
No thrown chairs. Lots of fight on our, lots of action on our side, outside the ring. There's a lot of that. At the end was a big melee between Undertaker, Kane, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, because there's a big match happening right now in Melbourne, Australia. A big event they're doing, so they're promoting that. So yeah, it was fun. I've never been that close. It's fun. It's fun. The funniest, two really hilarious things happened. One was, so in between when they go to TV time, when they go to television commercials, there is just, the arena gets dark and the wrestlers are sort of just meandering around. So between one of these commercial breaks, this little girl's in the front row and she's reaching out to Kevin Owens, he's a bad guy. She's reaching out for a high five. And he's close to her, but he's pretending that he can't reach her. And he's like, oh, I can't reach you. Oh, like faking it.
Oh, my gosh.
It was the funniest thing I see. I laughed so hard because she turned around to her mom. She was so mad.
Oh.
She was like, I was like, oh, he's doing. And then, so when he walked away from her, she couldn't see his face. And he was just cracking up because he knew he got her. He was like, I got her. She's so pissed right now. And then the second was Elias comes out. He plays the song and it's like, walk with Elias. But him and Kevin Owens are in the ring, and he made a joke about the Sonics, about Seattle not having a team. And they booed that man. You can find it on YouTube. They booed him for five minutes straight.
Shaking my head.
They booed him so loud for 5 minutes. It was incredible.
Triple H looks a lot different than I remember. I was just looking up Triple H.
Oh, short hair now, in a suit.
Yeah, well, I was originally like, same wait, muscles. Triple H is still going?
Yeah, he's in the McMahon role where he's like, kind of wrestles sometimes, but is like running the show.
Yeah, he's like the corporation now, right?
He's the corp. Yeah, but it's good. He's really phenomenal at that job, and he's been really good at finding talent.
Did he marry Stephanie McMahon?
Yeah, they're legit married.
Like in real life?
They're married for real.
Yeah.
Family and everything.
Cool, cool, cool. All
right, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, so what I have been watching this week is season 4 of Ballers. I waited for a while to get it started, and so I'm finally beginning again. And can I just say one more time for the record how much I love The Rock? I love him. Dwayne Johnson, you're amazing. So first episode of the new season, they're considering working with some professional surfers. And Russell Brand is doing a cameo in it. Or I don't know if it's a cameo if it's not him, right? He's just an actor playing another character. But he's there and he says something about, are you familiar with the sport, are you familiar with it or something? And he's like, my ancestors invented the sport. And I was like, yes, they did. I love you. Thank you for pointing that out.
So did Polly's actually invent surfing? Or is this just one of those kind of things where culture claims something? Because there are lots of places with waves and surf.
So I'm not an expert, but I do know that in terms of the sport as it is, yes. I mean, the white people saw Polynesians on surfboards and said that looks fun.
We've got to try it.
And now they're doing it. So I'm not going to claim that no other cultures like on a shoreline also jumped on some kind of board and rode the waves, but I mean Polynesians are the first people on Earth anyway, so yes.
See, and that's what I was thinking.
No.
That your claim there, cuz one of your family members also claimed that Polynesians invented tattooing.
Did they?
They did.
Maybe they did.
Samoans.
People have been tattooing themselves back to the, what do you call it? To the Ice Age, at least.
Yeah, Samoans.
I don't know how that's not, I don't know, I don't.
No, I'm pretty sure tattooing being was, true. Tattooing was, quote unquote, invented, like, independently by multiple cultures.
All right. Well, again, I'm not an anthropologist. I do know you're repeating some of the stuff that you hear from, you know, family members and others who are either Samoan or Polynesian of some sort. When it comes to tattooing, yes, Samoans, my understanding is Samoans invented tattooing. Where it originated, it was actually some women from Fiji who were swimming to Samoa, and they ended up diving. They were singing the song that the women are tattooed and not the men. The women are tattooed and not the men. And then they saw a pearl in the bottom of the ocean, so they swam down to get it, and it was so deep that by the time they got it and got back up to shore, I mean not to shore, to the surface, and started swimming again, they forgot the words of the song and started singing the men are tattooed and not the women. The men are tattooed and not the women. And so that's where you see the Samoan men with their peas, where it's like full on tattoo from mid shin, right, all the way up, like including all their junk area and to their hips. And it's my understanding that like when the white people came, and I say white people because I don't remember if it's like, I don't remember what country they were affiliated with. When they came on their ships and saw the Samoans, they were like, whoa, I think they thought that they were wearing pantyhose or something. And it wasn't until they got close up, they realized that they were tattooed like that. Anyway, but yes, thank you to The Rock for pointing out our culture and just speaking up. I mean, there's little tidbits that people don't know, and I appreciate that he mentioned it.
Yeah, I think to the bigger point, I mean, we saw this week with Bette Midler and her dumb tweet, but
my,
I know, goodness. but just the erasure of people of color in history is an ongoing thing that I think I like now that people like The Rock and other people, you know, on these platforms have a voice enough to correct people.
Yes.
And say, that's not how it went.
Exactly.
Yeah, because they love doing that.
Can you give me a 30-second of what Bette Midler tweeted?
She used a stupid quote from Yoko Ono about how women are the N-words of the world. Yeah, the face you made is exactly it.
Oh.
Yeah.
She said N-word, though.
She typed N-words, but we know what it means. And but that just completely erases, like, cool, if that's true, what were these white women doing when black people were getting lynched? What are white women doing right now when these young black men are being killed in the street by the cops? Where are you at when this is happening, if this is the case?
Well, and also we have white women to blame for a lot of things.
We do.
So, yeah, no, it was...
I love them. I love my white friends, but yeah, there's 50% of you who are cool with this.
And I feel a little for her because some people just, you say things and you don't really think about it. And like, my impression was it was coming on the heels of people saying whether they believe Dr. Ford. And I think it was North Carolina senators, I forget who, implying that Dr. Ford was too ugly in high school to have been tried to be raped.
People said the same thing about Cosby's victims.
Yeah.
They were unrapable because they were not attractive.
Right.
It's the thing.
It's ridiculous.
D.L. Yulee. D.L. Yulee said that.
So
Damon Wayans. No, it was Damon Wayans. Sorry, not D.L. It was Damon Wayans said that.
But yeah, so I get what Bette Midler was trying to get at. And also, yes, women across the world are treated horribly. Like oil poured on you and burned because of, you know, I mean, it's true. Women have been, I mean, the burning years in Europe, women have been treated horribly throughout history. But you should not be, I mean, where she messed up is trying to compare that struggle with another group struggle, because that's not
different. And a struggle,
it's different.
A struggle that's specific to things that have happened here in America.
Yeah.
Even though racism is universal, you're tying into a struggle that we are still in. And what does that mean for black women? What does that mean for, and my biggest, not to go on tirade, but my biggest frustration recently has been this conversation of this is too much and this is in America I know, and and how do we live in this, and I can't take it and I want to leave the country and things are unfair. I'm like, what do you think the rest of us have been going through?
Yeah.
What do you think we do every morning when we wake up? You think we haven't been feeling this for, you think my dad didn't feel this and his dad didn't feel this before he was killed by some Klansmen? Yeah. We've all been feeling it.
You know, like, I'm going to, like Shalia said, she wasn't, probably wasn't thinking fully, but despite what you just said there, like, I'm not worried about somebody throwing oil on me and lighting me on fire. Of course. To, like, yes, we do have, like, there has been a struggle for Black people and other people of color, but the sort of violence that women still face and should be and are afraid of, I think actually at this point is more so.
I think the point you're missing is that there are women who weaponize their whiteness against Black people constantly still. So that's a mute point that they're the quote unquote N-words of the world, because there are women who do that. Act of violence you're talking about them facing, there are women who project that onto women of color, onto men of color, onto young boys. All these women we've seen making these phone calls to little Black kids, it's just, that's violence.
No, I got thing. You, and I agree 100%.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people who we're hearing saying those sort of things are comfortable or well-to-do or middle-class white women is what you're talking about. And once you leave that group, you're talking about like Black, you're talking about brown, Muslim, all like, or just people from places that are, I don't know how to say it, less progressive towards women.
Yeah.
I actually, yeah, they're, the point is, it should have came from maybe a different source, but I see the point being made.
Her point is that women have it hard in this world. That's all you got to say. That's all you have to say. You don't have to compare it to another struggle. You don't have to throw the N-word out there. Because here's the thing, and shout out to Rob from Black Guy Who Tips. The point he made was like, Black people don't say this and Black women don't say this because it's disrespectful. So why do you say it?
I completely agree. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah. We're not. It's not a term we're using.
Right. I mean, and again,
so be cool, be chill on using it. I don't understand it.
The things that she's pointing out, I think the people who are upset about this, but what she said, I think what she's pointing out, they will agree with her that is all bad stuff. And none of us, we all think it's wrong.
We all think it's
wrong. The problem is the way she said it. And
then she doubled down on it.
Oh, she did. I didn't hear that.
Oh, it was true then, still true now. Like, well, come she's on. Like
defending herself.
Just be like, yeah, I should have said that. Was stupid.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to say the other piece about Ballers is that it was reminding me of last season. And I think it's kind of funny that we had our conversation earlier about our key arena and our best NBA team leaving and then potential of an NHL team coming, because season 3 of Ballers was all about getting a team, an NFL team into Vegas. And it was so interesting to me watching the dynamics between the owners and all of the different interests there are in terms of creating, like moving teams from city to city and creating new teams and how that'll work. And I'm sure everybody watches Ballers. They should. It's on HBO, but it's really fun. I love it. And I'm enjoying this, the beginning of the season. The other thing that I've been up to is I finally finished a book that I started for Denmark. So for our trip to Denmark, I found a, what is it called? A historical fiction?
Mm-hmm.
A novel. It's weird because there's like 5 books, but this is like the series within those books about Valhalla. And it's done by I believe she's from Denmark, the author, and I'm forgetting her name right now, Johanna, and it starts with an H, but it's the Valhalla series. And it starts, the first book is The Unbroken Line of the Moon. And it's really interesting because it takes place in like the late 900s. And goes into like a few years after that. And it follows 3 main characters and is told through their points of view. And I do think it's interesting because, again, what we were talking about in terms of women and how they've been treated throughout history, it was a really hard book for me to get through because she didn't hold any punches when it came to that. And it makes me very thankful that I'm alive in 2018 and not in that time. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good book and I'm glad that I got through it. And it was really fun to do that while traveling through Denmark because when we were going through the castles and then the National History Museum, which was in the Frederiksborg Castle, we were seeing faces of characters that we are hearing about in our book because we listened to it through audiobooks. And so we were like, wait, hey, this is a real character. This person was really there. And we were seeing their faces and their paintings. And so that was really neat. So shout out to that book. I will maybe try to find out who the author is and put that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not usually a political podcast.
That's fine.
But what I've been watching ties into our discussion about women. I watched RBG, which is
Yay!
You saw it already.
Yeah, I went and saw it in the theater, and I was so moved. Like, I was teary-eyed and reminded of, like, why I do the work I do. And so I didn't know her story, really. So it was motivating. It makes me really thankful. And I loved it so much. And so since then, I've been telling Kendon, like, I need all the men I know to watch this. Like, I need you to see this film. He's just, okay. What did you think about it?
What did you think about it, Kendon?
I mean, depending on how knowledgeable you about this sort of stuff, like, it was not inspirational to me, and I don't feel like I learned much about the struggle of women, but maybe that's because I'm, like, into history. Anyways, I think it really showed why she was particularly worthy of being put onto the court. I learned a lot more about her than about the women's movement, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some good points made there, and, like, as recently as the 1970s, there were, like, several states where a man could not be convicted of rape, of raping his wife. Women couldn't apply for credit on their own. And this is all, like, very, like, relatively recently when you think
on the historical. Lifetime.
Well, no. You were born in 1978. So I guess maybe, yeah. Because I think they were talking about 1977 or 1979, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So and what else was there? Was one other one? I can't remember now.
Yeah. So that's the thing is that was the state when she went to law school. Well, she was not a single mom. She had kids in law school and she was raising a family. And she's impressive person. But then I had never heard about her legal career. I just haven't ever. I'm sure lots of people knew about it and are familiar with her. I didn't know that. She was fighting for women's rights as an advocate. And so that was really neat to see. And then the other part that I found interesting was that when she got onto the bench, she was more of the conservative side. And like as people have been leaving, she's ended up one of the more progressive justices on the court. And they kind of showed where she had like started in towards either in the middle or towards the one end. And then as people have left, you ended up where she is now. And I thought that was really interesting.
I watched it more recently and I'm pretty sure that it does not ever show her on the conservative end. It was more maybe moderate, but I don't think she ever was on the conservative end.
What you're saying is though, it's more conservative compared to who was already on the bench.
That's what I mean is that yeah. She like where she is now, she was more on the other side.
Yeah.
And because of the people who have left the bench in the meantime and who have joined the bench in the meantime, now her spot, like if you rank them,
she's more progressive.
Yeah, she's now more progressive.
At the time, she wasn't.
Exactly.
Right. Gotcha.
So anyways, I don't want anybody to take what I'm saying is don't watch it.
Uh-oh.
I think that it like you should watch it. And I think I learned a lot about her as a person and her as a jurist. I don't know if this is the best place to learn about the women's movement is kind of what. And so it was inspiring. But then also part of the is an interesting time. I think it's timely that I watched it now because we are having the Kavanaugh. I think today he may be confirmed today. I think today the vote is scheduled for today. And it's very interesting to have learned so much about somebody who I think is very qualified, very like worthy of serving in that sort of position. And then somebody who I'll say shortly, I don't think is. And then I think the other main thing that I got out of this is I'm very concerned about the idea of these lifetime appointments in general. I think that there should probably be some sort of term limits.
I agree.
Because, yeah, I mean, right now we are basically hanging on her health that things don't get, like, permanently changed. Well, not permanently, but, like, changed for 40 years versus, right. You know, if a justice turns out to be somebody who was not really well, is not a, how do I say, isn't worthy of being in the court or this or that, if you only have to deal with them for 20 years, as opposed to, you know, if they get somebody on there in their 50s, you right. might have them for 35, 40 years.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Well, it's been a packed week that we've had. And yeah, like Kendon's indicating, we're recording on a Saturday. It's our new podcast day. I like it. It's a nice way to start the weekend. It's early. It is early on a Saturday. Listeners, we're waking up real early for this. So I hope you appreciate it. Okay. So have we all said what we were watching?
We're on a time crunch because you have somewhere to be.
Yes. Maui, our kitten, is now 1.5 years old. So I got to take him to the vet today.
What time is your appointment?
He doesn't know what's coming.
What time do you need to leave here?
I need to leave here by 1:30 p.m. So okay. We're okay. We're doing okay.
We're good.
But we do need to move this along. So we are ready. Are we ready to go into our topic? We're ready to
talk about one of our favorite movies.
It's a full moon. Beware the moon and stick to the road. Oops. I thought we'd go back to the slaughtered land. Yeah.
Man. Pack your bags, get your passport ready. We're flying to London with these two knuckleheads.
Are they knuckleheads?
They are knuckleheads. Okay. That's the kindest word I have for them. All right, so who wants to lead us into it? 1981, two college kids traveling for 3 months, backpacking through Europe. They start in North England and are working their way down to Italy.
Right. So it opens with them being in a small town.
Yeah, getting dropped off. And they had hitchhiked, or they mm-hmm. were getting a ride, and the guy was
like, which is so like late 70s, early 80s, is people hitchhiking.
Hitchhiking, yeah.
Like, why didn't you Uber?
Well, where were your phones the whole time? It's like, oh my goodness. So getting dropped off, and then him being like, all right, I'm going this way. This is where you guys are. Stay away from the moor, stay on the road, whatever. Where were they going? They were just like, hey, can you drive us as far north as you're headed?
We have no idea where they were headed.
No, and they don't seem to know where they were headed. They were just like, whoa, let's see what's here. I'm hungry. Let's stop.
All right, before we get into the plot, though, it's directed by John Landis. You guys are all familiar with John Landis?
Am I?
Yeah, you are.
A bit familiar with his son. His son is kind of a... he's a character. And he directed Chronicle.
Right.
And also either wrote or directed American Ultra. Yeah. I think he wrote American Ultra. Yeah.
So Landis directed Animal House, The Blues Brothers, Trading Places, Twilight Zone the movie, and drumroll, Thriller.
Okay. I can't wait till we do Trading Places.
Think about what we just saw and think about Thriller.
Oh, Thriller. I thought you were saying drumroll Thriller was a thing. He did Thriller?
It makes sense now.
Yeah, it does.
It does.
So we're 1981. When was Thriller?
84, 85.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah. All right. And it stars David Naughton, who plays David.
David plays David.
Griffin Doom plays Jack.
And
and Jenny Armiger is Nurse Alex. We're going to Nurse Alex because she's doing too much.
Yeah. Well, but go back to Jack real quick. That actor, I saw him and was like, oh, I know you. I totally know you. Where do you know him from? He's the teacher in My Girl. He's the teacher that she has a crush on. So she takes the poetry class to get to see him more. He's the cute teacher.
Man, he's been acting like crazy.
So I was like, wait, who is he? And I looked and I'm like, what? These are not the movies I'm thinking of. He's still in stuff. He's been acting a lot.
Yeah, he was Mr. Bixler in My Girl.
Yeah. Sorry. So wait, and I was cutting you off at the time. So wait, who played our nurse?
Our nurse is played by Jenny Ogutor.
And who was the doctor? Did you have him up?
No, it didn't show up.
I appreciated him. And she was really pretty.
John Woodvine.
Yeah, I thought he did well.
Dr. Hirsch. He was trying.
He was.
He was trying to do the right thing. Anyway, so yes, end up at this pub. What is the pub? The pub has a crazy name.
The Slaughtered Lamb.
And the sign on the Slaughtered Lamb, is that a werewolf?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a wolf.
It's a wolf.
And
slaughtering something.
No, it's being slaughtered. There's being like slaughtered. A stake through the wolf's mouth.
So they're there. They walk in and there's like a pentagram on the wall.
Yeah.
They don't want to ask about it. Everyone's being shifty. And it starts as soon as they start asking questions, these locals want them out. Now, it's hard to for them to know if the locals just don't like visitors or if they're just, if there's something sinister going on. But then once they get them to leave, they tell them, you know, stay on the main road.
What else, what stay it, on the road. Don't go onto the moors.
Don't go on.
What are moors? M-O-O-R-S. I didn't know what that was. I was just like, so basically but they all give of the them a bit of rules
to
try
to save them. Because their thing is like, what can we do?
Yeah. Because like, they're like, you're not letting them go. You can't let them go. And so that's when they give them that tip of like, stay on the road.
Yeah.
So the moors are this, just that area of rougher land on the outside of the trail. It's kind of uncultivated land.
Yeah. So they somehow end up not on the road anymore.
Oh my gosh, we see that happen. Like,
immediately.
These two, they cannot follow simple instructions. I don't like them. I did not like them from like the moment they started talking about Debbie and the way they were talking about her.
Yeah. They're a bunch of frat boys.
And then they go into that pub and they're just obnoxious. I was like, obnoxious, is this Americans? Yeah.
Obnoxious Americans. Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Sure.
What is the pentagram there about?
I don't know.
So when I was watching this, and Shalia didn't think this, and I guess you didn't. I asked you about it too. I thought that they were in on. I thought that the townsfolk were bad.
No.
I got a sinister vibe from them, and I thought that they were going to be maybe the reason why one of these characters became a werewolf. Like they were going to, I don't know, feed one of them to a werewolf or curse them or something. They all seemed sinister to me, and they're like, we can't let them leave. Like, they knew something you can't, you know, now you know I have to kill you. And I'm thinking part of that is I saw them kind of like when you watch Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And everybody is like a bit off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't trust any of them.
But then they end up shooting the werewolf.
Oh, by the end of the movie?
No.
Or not even that far into the movie, I realize, they're fine. I'm talking about just up to the point where the kids actually leave the pub.
Yeah.
I didn't trust those people at all.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I thought I was a little confused by the conversation. I took it as they have a werewolf in this town. They don't like these kids. They don't want them staying here, but they're not going to talk about this werewolf, and they're not going to keep him here. And then after they leave, there's the conversation. The barkeep woman is like, you can't let them go.
There's no food
here. We're not
going
to let them go. Yeah, that was so weird.
Yeah, they were very hostile. There's nothing here for you. Yeah. Like when they were like, there's no food for you. Like I was thinking maybe a little more like, it reminded me kind of like a vampire sort of thing. But they're like, oh, there's no food for you here. And it's like, oh, do they just have like raw steak? Like, is this a whole village of werewolves? Because it wasn't London. So I was like.
There's a movie like that I would recommend to you. Later on.
See, okay. You know, this is, you know, maybe my brain was working too much, but then they're like, there's nothing here for you. You can't have this. You can't have this. Yeah. It's like, this is a werewolf-only bar? And then I was thinking of Blade.
Yeah.
Well, it was clear they didn't want them there. But then, so they're talking about it that after they leave. Mm-hmm. And one of, like, there's the main guy. He seems like the main guy who's just like, they go. It's not our problem or whatever. And then the darts guy, I didn't understand. It was hard for me to understand him because he missed his shot and it was like, you made me lose my shot. And he was like one of the aggressors in terms of like, we should get out of here. But then when they're talking about it after the kids are leaving, when that guy says, it's not our problem or something, he's like, it's murder. And so I'm like, I couldn't understand what his position was.
But not want to see them dead. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he knows what's going to happen if they get out there.
Why did he scare them off?
He just been an asshole.
It's so weird. I was confused.
He can be an asshole.
Yeah, he totally can be. But, like, from my point of view, I was like, oh, is he the head werewolf?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's the hothead. Yeah, so these kids are walking.
They hear a noise.
They don't know where they're going. Like, they're just.
Then they start running. They have no idea which direction they're running to. Then they're being circled by it. And then Jack falls down.
Yeah.
David. Is it David?
So Dave falls down.
Jack goes help him up and then gets murdered. And then he takes off on his friend. He just runs.
Yeah, he does.
I think that was completely reasonable. And I was like, oh, this sucks. And then he turned around and went back. I think that's what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't expect you to stand your ground against a giant wolf, like, and the snap of a fingers, but after your blood's cooled down even a modicum and you decide to turn around, you're okay in my book.
Yeah, he's okay. He was like, oh, Jack. Yeah. Turns around, runs, he gets bit, and then the werewolf gets shot. But we don't really see the werewolf. We see David turn, and he sees a human who's been shot a few times.
Yep.
And he passes out.
Wait, going back to the running away thing, I mean, that's the natural reaction, right? It's either fight or flight.
Yeah.
And so he flew
first, and then came back to fight.
Yeah. So I appreciate that. And then he's asleep for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Real quick, the werewolves in this, did it seem like they were using like a bear as a stunt double? Like every time they showed it really quick, it looked, and it was shaking its head around, it looked more like a bear than it did like a werewolf.
Yeah.
So I think that for the production purposes, they may have, like, I don't know, put an extra snout on a bear, yeah, and just, like, recorded it shaking around.
Yeah. So it he wakes up 2 weeks in the hospital.
Yeah. He's unconscious. In London. He wakes up in London, which is how he ends up in London.
And the story they give is, like, some madman who escaped from some mental hospital attacked them.
Yeah. And it makes sense. I was kind of confused. Like, why would they blame it on that and not on a wolf or something? Yeah. And then realizing because they had a dead body. Like, yeah, when they shot this werewolf, it turned back into the man that it was. And that person is now dead. So that was interesting. It was like, oh, okay, so you have to say it was him doing this.
And
that's
why he had on no clothes, because he's swimming in the facility, because he escaped. He's running around naked, and he attacked them in the woods.
And so, yes.
Then we're introduced to the nurse Alex.
Nurse Alex, and then another nurse is in there, too, and they're talking. Okay, so I have a question for you guys.
They're talking about looking at his penis.
Yes. And they're like, not our main nurse, but the other one is like, I think he's Jewish, and it's because he's circumcised. And the doctor comes in and is like, that's common practice now. When did it become common practice for Americans to circumcise all boys?
That's a very good question. I don't know.
I want to say it was like the early 1900s. It was part of a kind of a conservative religious revival. And I think they said that they believed that it would reduce masturbation.
See,
that's pretty good.
I don't think that can be right, because remember School Ties with Brendan Fraser? That was in like the 50s or 60s, and the kids knew he was Jewish because he was circumcised, and all those other kids weren't, and that's why he got shunned from the school.
Oh, it's the whole shower scene.
It takes time for a trend to cross the country.
That's what I'm saying. When did it become common where most American men would have circumcised male parts?
I don't know how we got on penises talking about.
Well, because that's what they were talking about. And I was wondering, because I was like, so this is 1981. And I mean, there are definitely some other countries that I don't necessarily know what their habits are. But I would think that people in England would, if it's common, and it was common by 1981, I suppose, I don't know. But I'm trying to think of was it in the last decade or so that they didn't know about it? Because if it was becoming common, and it was common since the 1900s, then nurses would think, I mean, right, we had World War II, so they would have seen Americans before. Nurses would think of Americans as mostly circumcised. They wouldn't see a circumcised and be like, oh, you must be Jewish.
In World War II, if you're mainly dealing with people in their early 20s to maybe their like that's mid-20s is probably the median age of who you're seeing. That means that they were born in the 19-teens.
And you just said that it became common in the early 1900s.
I told you when it was starting to be, like, when that revival and the idea of doing that was starting. So you have to extrapolate based off of when it was starting. When would it have become more common? So the nurses would not, in Europe, would not be as expecting that based off of the cohort of people who came through during World War II.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Okay. Well, right. I didn't research it. I thought you guys would know, like, the year.
My
like
penis
the,
facts
the decade of, like, your penis facts are not up to date.
They're not up to date.
The decade in which
we'll get to, all we'll of get a to, sudden, we'll get to, 90% more of the of penis boys. Stuff. Cause,
do we?
Yeah.
I hated
Nurse
this
Nurse Alex really wants some of that weenus.
Why?
The werewolf penis.
Is it just because he's American?
She like, just is on it. She's him? Way too horny for him.
He is obnoxious.
She invites him back to her. First of all, he kisses her when he's in the bed.
Yeah, and he's like staring at her.
Yeah, and then like she immediately goes to the bone zone when they get back to the house.
I thought it was another dream. They're in the shower scene. And
I was like, oh no.
It wasn't until they were done
You quickly were like, we're going to have sex. You just got out of the hospital. You've been in my hospital for a month, and I want to have sex with you. I've been thinking about it the whole time. Let's go. And then she leaves him in our apartment.
Yeah.
And goes to work.
Well, and he, okay, so that was also weird because his whole point was backpacking through Europe, mm-hmm. right? And like sightseeing. He was looking around. So this is your first day out of the hospital. You're healthy now, clearly. Why isn't he walking around London, like looking at stuff? Like, why is he hanging out inside her apartment all day? That didn't make sense to me.
I don't know. Do you think him being a werewolf made him better at sex? Kind of like how Teen Wolf was better at basketball?
Do you think wolves are better at sex?
In Teen Wolf, he became a werewolf and became better at basketball.
Okay, yes, but...
So in this movie, do you think him being a werewolf made him better in the bed, in the bedroom?
No.
Okay, your answer is no.
I have no idea.
Yeah, he seemed to be a little, you know, he was like a little more aggressive.
I mean, I hopefully this isn't too personal a question, Shalia, but do you want to be fucked the way a wolf fucks another wolf?
Who knows if he's doing that? I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, like competing, like hand-eye coordination, running fast, being aggressive. Like, I don't basketball know. Involves all of
it's
that.
It's a real question.
Sex involves, like, candles and, you know,
this sounds really romantic.
Or what is it? Let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Maybe this is another version of this movie where it's, you know, we get to know more about this.
I don't know.
So in between all this stuff, David is having these super crazy dreams, which I totally forgot about. There's the one where he's running through the woods and he eats at the deer. What's the
Thanks
first
for
one?
The warning, Tim.
I warned you about that.
I appreciated that one.
Then there's the one where the Nazi people show up at his house. And, like, shoot everybody. And then he wakes
having, like,
up.
Like, dreams inside a dream.
Yeah, and he wakes up and he has another dream. And he wakes up from that.
Oh, is this around the point where we see his friend? What was his friend's name again?
Jack.
I'll go deeper into it later, but favorite part of the movie.
I liked when every time Jack showed up, he looked worse.
That's what I'm going to talk about later.
Also, they stole this for The Mummy.
Stole what from
the this
mummy?
Idea? The Mummy with Tom Cruise, his buddy played by Jake Johnson, dies early on in the film, and then he shows up in visions to Tom Cruise to talk to him about the mummy. The same way Jack shows up to talk to David about the werewolf. How the crazy part, I hadn't really watched it in years, is Jack is compelling David to kill himself.
Oh no, yeah, he's like,
he's
you
like,
need
you
to
gotta
die.
Kill yourself, bro. Like, I'm wandering around. Happening. This isn't fun. Dead people aren't cool to talk to. I need to transition onto the afterlife. I can't with you still being alive. I need you to kill yourself.
And also, you're going to hurt other people, so you need to kill yourself for that reason, too.
You're
going to kill people.
The way this movie ended, which is very sudden, and also I was like, oh, I actually appreciate this, because when I saw it, as the movie was setting up, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, so maybe this is my modern mindset, but I was like, oh, so these two need to pair together and go and figure out how to break the curse of the no, like, he has to die. That is actually
he's gotta go.
The solution to this problem.
Yeah
And at some point it's, how is he gonna die? And he tries to kill himself and he wimps out. And then and here's the thing, the reason I say that is because he knows he's killing people, so he needs to just do it. And yeah, I'm
he
sorry
doesn't know
that
it
might
first
hurt. Yes, but by the time he's in the phone booth with the knife, I'm like, you need to just do this. Like, yeah, it's going to hurt. You know what else hurt? Yeah. The guy that you pummeled in the train station. Okay. And now I'm going to be afraid.
So there's some really cool murders here. There is just like six bodies in the night, right? So it's the two people he kills at the dinner party. Then it's the four like homeless people he kills. Three. So it's five people that die that night.
Well, plus the subway train or the subway,
oh, that subway guy,
tunnel,
which is my
really
favorite
scary
scene. That is my favorite scene. That scene is so good. It's such a well-shot scene.
You are now accompanying me to the light rail.
Right, we've all
day.
Been there, right? Waiting for a bus or the light rail or a train, and you're by yourself, and you feel like you heard something. Then you're like, hey, somebody there? In your head. Anyway, then he finally sees it, and he tries to run away. But I like how it's shot, because that last shot is from the top of the escalator, and you see him. He does the thing people do in movies, which is like fall down. And he's like laying on the escalator, and you see this gigantic wolf slowly walk towards him. And that's the scene. We never see him get eaten. We never see what happens to him. We never see it.
It anyway. Was really well done.
So after that, after those murders, he wakes up in the zoo with
the
wolf.
Yeah, that was funny.
And the wolves are just cool around him. And then he steals he's naked, so he steals this kid's balloons.
That wasn't cool.
He steals the coat.
He's naked. Hey, in come a here, bush kid. And calls this little kid over.
Give me a balloon. Steals all the balloons.
Come over here. I'll give you money.
He got him 2 pounds.
And like, you're naked in there. You know what the optics of this are? Like, call an adult and say, "Hey, can I borrow some clothes? I woke up naked."
He's naked and afraid. So he has all this energy. He says he feels the best he's ever felt.
Yeah, because he's finally eaten. Remember, he was asleep for 3 weeks.
He didn't have an appetite.
He wasn't hungry. He kept trying to eat and wasn't hungry. He's so obnoxious when he made the nurse force feed him. Yeah. Like, just dude, eat. Yeah. You don't have to be hungry to eat. Just eat.
So that happens to him, and then so they're gonna go to the police. So the doctor, meanwhile, Irving, whatever his name is, like, is trying to figure out what's happening, because he doesn't believe his story that something happened. He said it was a wolf. So he visits the pub, and the pub is real shifty and shady with him. Mm-hmm. He drinks his pint and is like, "I'm out of here." Then there's a creepy guy who's like, "I have information for you."
That's the darts guy.
It's the darts guy who tells him, gives him a little bit of enough. So then they're like, "Hey, where is David? Bring him in."
We now know he's dangerous in London.
So on the way to the police station is when they get the taxi driver is like, "Yeah, man, there were 6 killings last night."
Yeah, that was interesting. So she's like, so the doctor gives the instructions to the nurse, and she's like, "Okay." And so she just like, and he's all happy and energetic and like
all horny. So she's just
leading him. It was kind of funny. It reminded me a little bit of when I took Kendon to see 50 Shades of Grey. Like, where he was just like happy and like in a good mood and like following me along, like, "Here, come on, let's go over here." You don't know where we're going, but you're okay with it because you're in a good mood. And then he starts hearing about these murders and then gets out of the car.
Because he realizes it was him.
Yeah.
He had a moment of like, "Oh, everything I've heard from this, I've been seeing my friend," because he's up at night talking to him. She's like, "Who are you talking to?" So everything he's seen or heard from his dead friend, the mysterious waking up, the weird dreams, he puts it all together in the taxi and is like, "It's me.
It's me.
I have to kill myself."
Which is what his friend was telling him all along. If he could just take simple instructions, but these kids can't. They can't even stay on a road when they're told, "Stay on this road. Don't walk off the road." We see the clip when they walk off the road. Yeah. They're just not paying attention. No.
So now they're trying to find him. They gotta find him.
Well, so first he tries to get arrested. So he's with the nurse and he tries to get arrested. And he's like,
I thought he was going to hit him. I was like,
that's
punch
what Kenan was like. Just punch him.
Just punch him.
Is that white privilege?
Yeah, for sure. They wouldn't arrest him.
There's a lot of privilege in this.
Oh, there's a lot of privilege. Quick question. Where were his parents? How come they never came out there?
That was also my question. Like,
because he was
you're there for in 3 weeks. In a coma for 3 weeks. My parents would have, someone would have flown out there.
A person.
I mean, I don't know. Is it that easy to track down people as it is now?
Yeah, because they said to talk to his parents.
Talk to his, but did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, the embassy guy was like, "Your parents know."
Yeah. So the embassy guy comes in first and talks to him. And he gives all the exposition about his parents.
I don't know. It would still be pretty expensive for them to come out there.
Having just purchased an extra plane ticket to Europe, I agree. But you would think, I can't imagine parents not going out there.
We didn't get the idea that he was poor or that he's backpacking in Europe.
Yeah, well, when we see his house, we know what his house looks like.
Yeah.
Like, they could have sent one of them. I'm sure they could have sent one of them.
For 3 weeks? It's not like it was like the next day.
I forgot. When do we see his house?
In the flashback, in the dream. It's him and his family having whatever, and then the Nazi dudes show up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
that's his house.
Anyway, yeah, so he tries to get arrested, so here's the thing. If she would just use her words and say, "The reason we're going to the hospital is because the doctor has figured it out and the police are there too. They're waiting for you. Like, you don't have to go get arrested by a random street cop because we're headed to all of those people right now.
We're going to figure this out together."
I mean, not that he would listen because he doesn't listen.
But you know, horny nurse Alex decides to let him go.
Why? What is she seeing in
him again? She's so horny. That's it.
So weird.
She's just horny for some werewolf penis. She wants him.
She straight up gives him her like sexual resume.
Yes. She does. She doesn't know how many people she slept with. She gives him the body count and it's like,
and breaks it down into how many were one night stands. Yeah. She said, like, "I've been with 7 people. Four of them were
horny nurse Alex."
Like, what? Are you keeping a tally?
She's really doing too much. She's the worst character in this movie.
Yeah. So he is a college kid, goes to NYU. Mm-hmm. Are they around the same age?
No, she's older than him.
She is older, right? Mm-hmm. So that's also troubling.
She saw his penis.
She doesn't have to be.
She's ready to go. Him,
right?
I think she was, though.
Okay. Well, and I noticed immediately after they had sex that she was wearing his t-shirt.
Yeah, man. She jumped right into a relationship with this guy.
That's where I was about to go. Like, they were like...
You're an attractive nurse in London. You can't find somebody? You gotta sleep with the werewolf?
Living with her? It seemed like he moved in.
And no one seemed to have a problem with the fact that she was at his house.
I mean...
Nobody was like, hey,
or that he was at her house.
Yeah, you shouldn't be having a patient at your house.
I mean, I think that that was part of it, right? Because the other nurse tried to cover for her when the doctor asked. Mm-hmm. And then she's there and she's like, yeah, I know where he is. My impression was like, okay, his plans are a little bit off. He didn't have any plans. So he didn't have a place to stay. So it makes sense that he would, if he makes a friend, he's staying in somebody's house. It was weird that it was hers. But oh, yeah. I can see that happening. But, yeah, how long was he going to stay there? What was the plan?
What's his plan for getting home?
Why did they go? Oh, my God.
Why didn't he call his parents?
They're on their – so they go shopping for food, and they ride the train.
Yeah.
It's just the whole thing is
weird. Why didn't you call your parents? Why aren't you trying to make a plan to go home? Why are you not really mourning your friend's death? It was a lot. They were just concerned with having sex in a relationship.
Yeah.
He went from dying to being in a rom-com.
Yeah. Fine with that.
I didn't even think about that. His friend just died. His friend and he's just murdered. Kicking.
He's just...
They didn't send the remains home.
No, they said it was a funeral. Because his friend, in his first visit, talks about who showed up at the funeral.
Yeah.
And how his girlfriend is now with their other friend.
So he said he's a spirit, or something along the lines of a spirit that's walking the earth now. Is he... always around? Does he have a physical presence? Like when he's not hanging out with David, is he
just wandering around?
Hanging out somewhere, or is he manifesting every time?
No, he says he's wandering around. He says that's why he doesn't like. That's why he wants him to kill himself because it's not fun.
Is he wandering around in a corporeal form that whole time?
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. That's why he says it's not fun for him.
And
dead people aren't fun to talk to.
And that is, I don't know if it was influenced by this, but The Sixth Sense was the idea, right? Someone like, there. You're there. Like, most people can't see you, but you're there. And that, ugh. Okay, going back to the nurse, though, really quick. Is this a trope where it's like the nurse falls in love with her patient when she's sitting by his bedside?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's didn't one happen. Of those I was that in the hospital.
There were no horny nurse Alexes around me to take me home and take me on dates.
I'm sorry.
That didn't happen.
Can Jack pick up a coffee mug?
No.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
No. He just walks around.
Yeah. Even when we see Jack, Dave is the only one who can see him. Yeah. Like, so in the theater, you see later when Jack is introducing all of these people that he killed, the other person in the theater doesn't see any of them. He just sees David. But so you were going through the body count from the first night. So it's six. It's six
total.
He doesn't hurt any animals other than the deer.
The deer.
Yeah. Okay.
But that was a dream. We don't know if that really happened.
Right. Yeah. And probably not, because he was in, like, the hospital would have noticed that he was not there.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was like the wolf is out there and he's connected to it now. And so it's feeding. And so, but I don't think that's the case.
Or like some memories that weren't his.
That makes more sense.
Okay. So then we end up with them meeting up at this sort of pornography theater.
Those places are so gross. It seems so gross. I don't understand. I don't understand how those exist.
They don't exist anymore. Well, not that I know of. There used to be one downtown, like right on First Avenue.
There is one in The Departed.
Yeah.
And that wasn't that long ago.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why you would do that. New York makes sense.
One of my favorite parts of the movie. Because the British porn that they had.
Yeah. Like, the actual movie was really funny.
It was. Like, So there's a movie out called Mandy right now.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen, but I listened to the last podcast on the left and a couple other. And there's during the movie, which is like a crazy like revenge thriller or something like that. There's a scene where the main character stops and just looks at the TV for a second. And there's something called there's a commercial, like a kid's commercial called the Cheddar Goblin. And he's it's like macaroni and cheese commercial, like. Oh, for kids, except for the Cheddar Goblin. And he throws up the mac and cheese into their bowls. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a weird little vignette, like sort of within the movie. And that's how I felt about these porn scenes where it was just like, oh, it's like regular porn, and then somebody knocks on the door.
Yeah, he's like, oh, wrong like, house.
Oh,
I was like,
oh, I'm here to deliver the pizza. Or like, this is what I'm imagining from tropes of porn. And no, it's just a dude who's in the wrong location.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, bye. He closes the door, and then they go back to having sex.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Another, what was the other? There's another similar like that.
There's a phone call.
Yeah, a phone call that just leads nowhere?
No.
Yeah. That was hilarious. That was really, really funny to me.
It's really funny. Tense horror movie. That's a really funny scene. So they're in this theater talking, and as Ashley had mentioned, the other spirits that he killed from that night show up, and they all look disfigured. They look gross.
So they didn't look that gross to me. They looked normal with blood, like some liquid on them.
They look gross.
With some cuts. Jack is really bad at that point. Yeah. He's like super decomposed.
It's been longer for him.
Yeah.
It's been like a month.
Yeah. Poor guy.
So David starts going through his transformation again, which is a really cool scene. We don't see the full transformation, but he transforms in this theater.
Yeah. We haven't talked about the transformation yet, but so the first time we see the full thing, and the second time we see parts of it.
Painful.
It really does. Like that was, I don't know what films had looked like, but this was impressive.
Yeah, it was aggressive. Mostly it was like people falling down and popping up hairy. This was like.
Yeah, like within like a lot of horror stories, like I want to say like books or other sort of things that I'm familiar with, they're always referring to the curse of transforming into a werewolf, of becoming a werewolf. But this was one of the first times when I saw it and I was like, oh, transforming, like going from being a human into being this wolf monster is a painful, awful,
it's an awful thing experience.
To happen. And that is literally part of the curse. It's not, oh, I have to live as a werewolf. It's body horror.
It's every full moon your body's doing this thing.
Yeah.
Okay, also, you just said every full moon. I was extremely confused. I thought you only have one full moon per month.
Yeah, so every month.
Yeah, well, but he had two full moons in a row. He turned into a werewolf, and then the next night, the guy's like, it's a full moon. I'm like, wait, last night was a full moon.
You know, the only way I could justify that or something like that is that the werewolfness activates.
Yeah.
And like at the full moon, and then maybe tapers off.
Yeah,
or something like that. Because I remember being taught the moon cycles at some point in school, and I'm pretty sure there's only one.
So
you
gotta live with this. So you gotta live with this pain. So there's a transforming. So he kills one of the cops. Lady ticket holder screams. Other cop sees it. Sees him feasting on other people. Runs. Locks, slams the door. Meanwhile, Nurse Alex and the doctor and some cops are like driving past. They hear about the disturbance. They're like, it's got to be David. And they pull out. And then the wolf escapes into the streets and causes the worst traffic accident I've ever seen in my life.
Insane.
People get murdered. Someone falls through the windshield. Someone gets pinned against the car. People get ran over.
They can't just.
They hit a double-decker bus.
How fast were they driving? That was
people react as if they saw an actual werewolf, which is great.
I feel like that was almost slapstick.
Oh yeah, it was just like a bang bang. As people just someone's like, "How do we get more gore in this movie in the last 5 minutes? We're just gonna crush people with cars."
Well, it's kind of like somebody who really wanted to make like a movie about a car crash or like a total like clusterfuck.
Yeah,
but there's no story around it. They're like, well, you know what? I'm gonna make my short film. Yeah,
when the wolf escapes, it's just gonna
in this movie.
So
we had been talking about how is he gonna kill himself because he has to kill himself, right? And I think it was at that point where you hear them say bring rifles, and they're talking about the cops coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look to Ken and I'm like, oh, suicide by cop.
Yeah, so he goes down this alley. He can't get out. It's a dead end, and somehow Nurse Alex gets through,
mm-hmm.
and she's trying to have a talk with him. She's in a line of fire, which I don't understand.
Yeah,
but she's trying to have a talk with him, and David, calm down, and we'll fix this, and all this stuff.
Well, because she's afraid they're gonna hurt him, because she loves him.
They are gonna. How'd she love him? She just had sex with him once.
I don't know.
Was he that good? Maybe it's the werewolf sex. Maybe I'm onto something. Maybe it's that good.
Maybe a bit. No, actually, I think the 3 weeks, I think she fell in love with him. I'm coming. You said that, Shalia? I think I'm coming around to that.
I'm not falling in love in no 3 weeks.
Yeah, she loved him before she brought him home.
Oh, gosh. So.
He's like a wounded puppy.
He tries to attack her and then gets shot. He lunges towards her.
Oh, yeah. And then it's over.
Then it's over.
I really appreciated that. I was like, oh, there is no, this curse is, we're fighting to break the curse or trying to figure, nah, he's dead.
Did you guys ever see the sequel to this?
Is that Paris?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Paris is bad. But it's got one really cool scene where they're under like these catacombs and this guy's lighting a torch and the werewolf's behind him down this long hallway. And as he lights it, you see it getting closer. It's a dope sequence. In a mostly dumb movie. But I think they're thinking about remaking this original one at some point.
They should.
It's a really cool story. It's simple.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had been to London before I had seen this because
you want to go visit?
No, London's on my list of places to go. Visit. And now I'm going to be worried about werewolves.
Let's go to the pub. Let's go see a werewolf at night.
No, I'm going to be afraid that is what we're going to see. I'm going to try to avoid that.
But well done. Well done. Well done movie.
Agree, I guess.
Isn't that well done?
I mean, I don't like anybody in it. I despise every piece. I like the doctor. I did like the doctor, kind of. Yeah.
And I like Jack. Jack was just...
No, I didn't like Jack.
It's not Jack's fault.
The doctor might be my favorite character outside of Jack. This movie seemed really fakey to me. Like, I guess HD didn't really do a lot of favors, but I saw a lot of the makeup.
Yeah.
The acting was, it was too transparent in certain ways. And considering another movie that we recently watched that we'll talk about on the podcast that took place, that was filmed before this, that it was this movie seemed a lot less natural the way that they were acting. It seemed more staged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, what was your favorite piece about this movie?
Probably that subway scene.
Yeah.
That's really well shot because you don't see the thing, but you never really see the werewolf until the last few seconds of the shot. But you fully understand the terror the guy's in, and it has all the intensity and scares of something where you'd actually see him. Like it was brilliantly shot. Well done, edited. He's just a guy running through a subway because he's being chased. He ends up falling on the escalator, and then, you know, we never see his death. But you know what happened.
You know what happens. Yeah, that's the thing about this movie is I did not like it. I didn't like anybody. But I do think it was really well made. Like, it is definitely one where you have appreciation for the movie makers. Like, this is I think this is the best transformation I've ever seen.
Yeah.
This is, I was there when they were walking in the rain in England before they die. Mm-hmm. And like the way that they're like, yeah, you don't know where the werewolf is. It's circling us. They did a really good job making it. Kenan, what's your favorite thing? You said Jack?
Yeah, Jack, the decaying Jiminy Cricket of this movie. I think both, he's a funny part. I like that he progressively gets more disgusting throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. He's kind of, you know, humorous. And also, he's a pretty good source of exposition so that you know what's going on. And it seems fairly natural. I was only just thinking about now. I was like, oh, this is how they're getting information across to you, but not in a ham-handed way.
No.
Ham-fisted?
Ham-fisted.
Yeah. It's an interesting technique, right? You're directly just telling us. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what's happening.
This is why this is going to happen to you if you don't kill yourself.
Yeah. So my favorite thing was the music. So it starts with Blue Moon. I love things, funny things like that. Yeah. So it starts with that. And then at some point they do the Bad Moon Rising. I think that was during the sex scene, maybe? Or during the transformation. But I was just like, yeah. And I was singing along. And then my favorite version of Blue Moon was what they played during the credits. And so I thought that was fun. And it reminded me of True Blood. Because they talk about the werewolf bars, and that's what, like, they have these, like, specific songs. Mm-hmm. And the Bad Moon Rising, I think, is one that's, like, their favorite that they play in that bar all the time. So I thought that was really fun. In terms of influences, What influences do you think?
Yeah, I think it influenced. I mean, we talked about The Mummy, but I think it influenced something what Kenan talked about, which is the curse of being a werewolf, and seeing that in other properties. Right, the curse isn't just walking around as a hairy being; it's the transformation. I think a lot of other content, you know, scary, not scary, supernatural, has borrowed from that a way to tell a werewolf story. And you get the idea that there's also some lore in this little small town that they know about it. And I think that's also transitioned into other media, you know, especially in recent years.
Yeah. The thing about the curse of being a werewolf, my impression of that was always the curse of knowing that you're hurting people. Like, you can't control it and you're having to live with being a murderer. That's what I always thought. I thought it was like a psychological curse. No. But this is the first time I've seen it. I'm like, oh, it's a physical thing. Man, it looked good too.
Yeah.
They did well, like stretching his body out. And then, like, when the face scene, when you see the, like,
the close up on his eyes and his snout grows.
Yeah. It was well done. Good job. Other influences?
No, that's it.
Okay. It came out before Teen Wolf, but I didn't really see a lot of Teen Wolf in it.
No.
Okay. Well,
would you recommend this to people?
Yeah, I think it's fun. Like, if it's Halloween time and you want like a scary movie, this is kind of lighthearted. I screamed, I think, once. I don't remember when, but I definitely jumped once. So I would. Oh, one group that we haven't mentioned yet, we should just at least mention, because I did enjoy them despite myself, was the two cops. And how you have one who's just we're done, we're out of here. And then you got the other one who's over the top, like, just sit down. Like, just sit down.
I forgot
about it. And I kept wondering.
They're so goofy.
They're so goofy. And I kept wondering, like, what are you leading to? What's going to happen here with you two? And nothing does. Except for one of them loses his head.
Yeah. That's the thing that happened.
Yeah. And his, like, head just rolls. I think Kenan laughed out loud when the head was rolling after that happened. But, those two were funny because it was just, I thought they were building to something and then nothing happened.
Just the head rolling.
I would definitely recommend this movie, particularly for that transformation. And also, it's just a goofy movie, like, in a very fun way.
And then, obviously, Tim recommends it.
Oh,
you've been recommending it for a long time.
For sure. Watch it. Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun Halloween watch.
Now, you said that you saw it maybe a little too young. How old do you think you were when you saw it?
I'm probably under 10, for sure.
Okay.
It was my uncle.
Your uncle. Yeah.
I watched Scarface and all the stuff I should have never watched. This was one of them.
Well, this one isn't so bad. There was a lot of cursing in it, though. We were a little caught off guard by that.
Lots of cursing.
Yeah. It's kind of, that college kid's curse, so it wasn't unrealistic, but it was like okay.
They're cursing a lot.
1981, you're just speaking like you do. Okay. Well, next week, you guys, what is it?
Is that your music? I don't know what song this is.
You don't know what that song is?
No.
Let me try again.
I think you're a couple RPMs too fast. It's a couple BPMs too fast.
Wait, let me see if I can get it. Something more like that.
Yeah, you guys are. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
No, we want to hear you sing.
Nope.
Bum, 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 bum.
It sounds like Beauty and the Beast or something.
I was trying to slow
down. We're doing Halloween.
Halloween.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Halloween. That's coming out this year. Yeah. It's very confusing.
Halloween 1978.
Yeah, so this Halloween 1978, and then there's also 40 years later.
Yeah.
We've got Halloween coming out 2018. Mm-hmm. So we'll be watching Halloween 1978. Tim will probably see the new one. I don't know if Kendon will. I will not.
I'm for sure seeing that.
Yeah, I figured. So that's next week. So hopefully, folks, you enjoyed this episode and you're ready for Michael Myers to show up and scare us all for the rest of our lives. Okay. Forever and ever. Right? Take care.
We'll be back.